Good evening, everyone. Can I get a Hare Krishna?
Hare Krishna.
Good. Just making sure you're there. So it's very wonderful to be here this evening with all of you. So many places we could be on a Friday night, but here we are at the Bhakti Yoga Center. And here we are to kind of, amongst ourselves, discuss some spiritual wisdom, some insights from books like the Bhagavad Gita, which hopefully will help us in our life and help us to deal with the challenges that are there and the different roller coaster journeys that we go on. So today the topic that was given to me was the enemy within. Put your hands up if you feel you have an enemy within you. Okay. So maybe you guys are more qualified to give the talk than me. But today we're going to look at this concept of the enemy within and what the Bhagavad Gita says about it, what Krishna says about it. But before that, I'm going to come into that topic, but I want to start with something else. I want to begin today's talk by discussing conspiracy theories. That was creepy. Conspiracy theories. Put your hands up here if you, be honest, have looked up conspiracy theories. Okay, good. We have some honest people here. There are a host of conspiracy theories in the world. And people spend hours trying to figure it out. Like, what's actually really going on in the world? So what I'm going to do is I want all of you to stand up for just a second. And I'm going to go through some of the conspiracy theories, and I just want to know what all of you are thinking. Because maybe all of you here have some information that I don't have. So there are many conspiracy theories in the world today, but I'm going to go through some of the main ones. And this is the one I want to start with. 11th of September, 9/11. I'm sure you remember where you were when you heard about 9/11. I remember to this day I was in a car and I heard someone phoned and told me. 9/11 as we know it was an attack by the Al-Qaeda, by Osama bin Laden, by Islamic terrorists on the World Trade Center, riding these planes into the tower. Now there is a conspiracy theory that it wasn't actually Osama bin Laden. It wasn't actually Islamic terrorists. It wasn't actually the Al-Qaeda, but rather this whole event was created by the US government themselves on their own people. Why would they do such a thing? Because they wanted to justify their policy of attacking in the Middle East. And therefore they framed the whole thing, but the whole thing was actually created by the US government. Yeah, we can go, ooh. Now, this is the line here, right here. I want you to tell me, what do you think? Could it be true? Could it be true that this was the US government? Or definitely not, it was the Al-Qaeda. Please walk to your spot. And don't follow the crowd. Go where you think.
There should be a definitely true.
Definitely true. Okay, Nita is definitely.
I'm right here.
Okay, so. Are you guys American? Or? So you guys are convinced it was the Al-Qaeda?
No, opposite.
No, it was the opposite. Sorry. You guys are convinced that it could have been the US government?
Could
have, possibly. Krish, you're sure? It definitely wasn't the US government. You're not in Al-Qaeda, are you? So how do you know for sure that it wasn't the US government?
This doesn't make sense. Why would they do it to their own country? This doesn't make sense.
It doesn't make sense to you why they would do such a thing. Why do you think?
I think definitely the Islamic terrorists are capable of doing that.
So you think they are capable of doing it, so you can't see that that's anything out of the ordinary. Nitai, you were 100% on this.
Yeah.
Why?
Many reasons. You see exactly what happened after that event took place. You see exactly what happened. All American people again. And the other thing is that them doing that, even if there's so many Americans that believe that the government did it, what can they do? What can you do against it? Because how can you say your own government did it? And then I think the biggest factor was the fact that the towers collapsed exactly like a demolition. And then if you watch the video slowly, you can see each layer, there's an explosion.
There must have been many people involved in this. That's what you're saying. Scary, isn't it? It's scary that such a big event, you're saying most of you, could possibly have been reported in a completely contrary way to the whole world. It makes you wonder how much of the news can you actually believe. If this was made up, such a big thing, imagine all the other things that we just accept without even questioning. Interesting. Here's another one. Area 51. Now there is a conspiracy theory that aliens landed in this part of America, 150 miles from Las Vegas. Aliens landed here, they crash landed a UFO, and there are remains of aliens actually in this area. This area, by the way, you can't enter it. Not only can you not enter it, you can't even fly over it. It's out of bounds airspace. You're not even allowed to go over it. And the conspiracy theory is that there are actually aliens, UFOs, and remains of aliens in that area. Could be true or definitely not. Please let me know what you think. Some people are just permanently staying here. He's like, open mind. Anything's possible in this world. Anything's possible. And Prabhu has a lot of confidence. You're definitely sure.
In the media.
You're definitely sure that there's no aliens don't exist.
No aliens.
You don't believe that aliens exist, or you don't believe aliens came to this world?
Alien could be existing, but definitely not at that place.
What makes you so sure?
Because Americans are kind of fancy people who make up all these stories. Why not in anywhere else in the world? Why only in America?
Okay, good.
I think it could definitely be true, because I was watching a lot of these videos on YouTube.
Okay, it's all coming out now. It's all coming out now.
YouTube authority, yeah.
One ex-CIA intelligence officer did say that there's documents that the US government have on Area 51 that they don't want to disclose, and it is to do with extraterrestrial life.
Okay. So even the inside people have admitted it, that's what you're saying. Interesting. This is interesting. Anyone ever heard of the Illuminati? There are a few people, a handful of people, who are in charge of all the wealth in this world. They're in key positions. And these few people are actually determining the future of civilization. It's not the government, it's not necessarily even financial institutions or who you think. There are a few, a handful of powerful people in this world that are guiding the future of society. What do you think? It's only the time.
I think he thinks Krishna is there.
Nitai Kripa, you're 100% sure there's no Illuminati. He's not so sure anymore. You're not so sure.
No, she changed her mind.
I don't think so, no.
You don't think so, you're...
I think it could be like that, but not as dramatic. So there could be like the wealthy people who are influential, but maybe not like how we kind of view it as a conspiracy.
Okay, so you're saying, okay, it's not, yeah.
Actually, the the Illuminati is a creation of those people.
Okay.
That are control. They give you something to focus on rather than focus on them.
Okay.
So you never know who they are. We, you know.
So it's a conspiracy within a conspiracy.
No, it's not a conspiracy. It's only a conspiracy
it's
to
a
us.
It's a fabrication within a conspiracy.
It's to them, it's okay, life. Okay. It's you know, it's the way they live. It's not a conspiracy.
Interesting. Anyone here want to say anything on that?
Yes.
Oh. Not exactly Illuminati, but definitely there are people with the vested interests who are doing a lot of propaganda, which is not beneficial for the human beings, but beneficial to only few rich people.
Okay.
Definitely it's going
on. So you see there's some level of exploitation, yes. Manipulation, use of power. Yes. Ooh. 1969, one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind. Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin on the Apollo spaceship go to the moon for the first time. But was it actually filmed in Arizona desert? Was it actually a complete hoax? Was it just that the Americans wanted to beat the Russians in the space race, so they fabricated a whole story and staged the whole thing in their own country, and they didn't actually go anywhere outside of the Earth's atmosphere? Could be true, or definitely not.
So what's the question?
Do you believe that this could have just been in Arizona desert?
Oh yeah.
Definitely not. So you all are convinced. Sorry, you just came in the room, so you don't know what's going on. It's okay, we'll leave you out. We're just seeing these are conspiracy theories in the world, we're just seeing. So you're definitely sure they went to the moon? What makes you so sure?
Because I think if it was a lie, there's so many people, it would have leaked out.
It would have leaked out.
You know, involved.
But you were on that side when we talked about the 9/11 one.
Well,
that didn't leak out.
That's a possibility.
What makes you so sure?
Me?
Yeah.
They just made a Hollywood movie about it. It's got to be true.
Yeah. It's on Facebook as well.
Okay. One day we'll do a talk on the moon landing, actually. Because Srila Prabhupada did say different things about the moon landing. And it's not as simple as we think, actually. It's not as simple as we think. But anyway, we'll leave that for another day. Interesting. Okay, here's the final one. Nithai didn't even know about this conspiracy. Reptilians. There are actually powerful creatures, reptilians, who can transform themselves into human bodies and take up powerful positions in this world. They say Queen Elizabeth is a reptilian. George Bush, Hillary Clinton.
Sutapa.
Hey, don't blow my cover here. There are actually reptilians which are controlling this world. Could be true? Oh, this one they're not convinced. This one they're not convinced. This is too far out. You actually believe that it could be reptilians? What basis do you have to believe that? Anything's possible.
He just made that up, you know.
Okay. So, okay, she's bringing up the Bhagavatam. She's bringing up scriptures. Yes, there are races. Who knows? And you guys are sure, 100%. Prash, you're 100% sure.
Yeah.
How do you know?
It's just like, it's not possible.
Okay. Okay, you can sit down. That's it, enough of putting you on the spot. It's interesting how actually in life we may not actually know as much as we think. Now, with all of these conspiracy theories, I'm not saying the Vedas has an answer to each one of them. The Vedas may give us some insight as to what's possible, what's not possible. But the point I'm making here is that the world outside of us, anything's possible, anything could be happening. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna talks about how we shouldn't try to control the external world or even fully understand the external world because it's beyond our scope. So much of life, so much of people's lives is based around trying to understand and figure out everything around them and then trying to control everything around them. Even if we look at our lives, to some extent, we're always chronically trying to do that. Yeah, do you find that you're always trying to control everything around you, and then when you can't control it, what does it make you feel like?
Angry,
frustrated, annoyed, depressed, down. So there are so many conspiracies, theories in the world outside us. Krishna says, don't try and control the outer world. But what Krishna is instead saying is that we should try to control the inner world. The one thing you are in control of, the one thing you do have full influence over, the one thing you can understand fully is your inner world, your own consciousness, your own state of mind. But now the problem is this, that just as there are conspiracy theories in the outer world, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna also explains that there's a conspiracy going on in our inner world as well. And so much of the Bhagavad Gita, what Krishna spends time explaining to Arjuna, is how this conspiracy theory within us is taking place. He explains to Arjuna how this conspiracy within us can lead us completely on the wrong path, can lead us into a life which we didn't want, can lead us to do actions and make decisions that we didn't desire, and how it can actually end up creating a destiny for us that we don't want. And therefore, so much of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is speaking to Arjuna about what this inner conspiracy theory is and how to be mindful of it. And then he talks to Arjuna ultimately about how to overcome this conspiracy within. So what do you think that conspiracy within us is? Any ideas? Anyone? Yes?
That we can enjoy in this world.
The idea that we can enjoy in this world? Yes? Good? And can you tell me more about what the conspiracy is? Who's conspiring within you?
Mind.
Yourself?
Our mind.
Our mind. Yes. Krishna explains that there's a universal enemy within, and that is the uncontrolled mind. The mind that we're using, that we're utilizing, but that hasn't come under our full control or grasp. That mind can actually cause you so many problems. And therefore, especially in the 6th chapter of the Gita, Krishna is explaining so much about the mind. So let's look a little bit closer at this. So in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains the science of the self. Arunda, can you see that? Okay, so Krishna explains the first knowledge that Krishna gives to Arjuna. Krishna explains to Arjuna, Dehinosmin yata dehe. Gomaram yoganam jara tatha dehantara prapti dhirastatra namuyati. Krishna explains this body is always changing, but we're the soul. We're the soul which is animating, driving, in charge of this body. That soul is called the Atman, and that's who we actually are. But the soul is covered by a subtle body. That subtle body is made up of mind, intelligence, and ego. And from life to life, we carry the same mind, intelligence, and ego with us. That's why sometimes in this life, we know things. We have certain character traits. We have certain intuitions that we didn't even learn in this life. But it somehow just comes, because we're carrying it from previous existences. So Krishna explains in the Gita that just as wind carries aromas, then similarly the subtle body carries the soul from one body to another. And then Krishna ultimately explains that we have a gross body. And the gross body, the physical body, is what we're using to interface with this world, to get things done, to fulfill our desires and chase our dreams. And that gross body is made up of the physical elements: earth, water, fire, air, and ether. Yeah? So this is, many of you already know this. This is a very, very powerful insight. We take it for granted what Krishna has told us here, but this concept of who the self is, what is the
consciousness,
this has been debated by philosophers, scientists, theologians for centuries, and they can't all agree on what is the self. Socrates had some idea that he wasn't the body, because when they tried to poison him, he said, "Catch me if you can, because you can do something to this body, but you can't catch the soul." Descartes had some idea of what the self is when he said, "I think, therefore I am." He was going beyond the gross body, but he was very much still identifying with the mind. But Krishna goes beyond and says, you're a soul, you're utilizing a mind, and that mind is your interface to a physical body that you're also utilizing for a temporary amount of time. So if you think about an analogy of a computer, then the gross body is like the physical machinery, the keyboard. The soul is like the person behind the computer, animate or utilizing the computer. But unless you have software on the computer, you can't do anything with it. Okay? So the software is the interface. So that's the mind, the intelligence, the ego, what acts as the interface between the soul and the gross body. Yeah. So this is basically the first thing that Krishna begins explaining to Arjuna. Before I carry on, is there any questions on this that you'd like to clarify? Like the body, the mind, and the soul, the intelligence, ego. Is it all clear to you? Would you like to ask anything on this? Anyone? Yes.
What's the difference between the mind and the intelligence?
Good question. Well, maybe I'll show you this slide, and this might help to understand it a little better. This is an analogy given in one of the Upanishads, which is another book within the Vedic tradition. The horses are analogous to the senses. The reins are like the mind. The driver is the intelligence, and the passenger is the soul, and the chariot is the body. So the difference between the intelligence and the mind is that in an ideal situation, the intelligence controls the mind. The mind is basically coming up with options. Do this, do that. Stimuli is basically giving you ideas of what you can do. And the intelligence should be stronger than the mind to say, well, that's a good idea. That's not a good idea. That would be good, but in the future, yes, I should do this now. That should be done by the intelligence. And when the intelligence controls the mind, then the horses are controlled, the senses, and then one's life goes in the direction it wants to go in. You understand? So every morning when the alarm goes off, there is a mind-intelligence dialogue. When the alarm goes off, the mind says, oh my God, I can't believe it's that time of the day again. I feel really tired. And the intelligence says, no, but you've you went to sleep at 9 o'clock. That means you've had 7 hours sleep. You didn't have any problems at night time. So you really should wake up. The mind says, but you know, if you get up and you're still feeling tired, you won't be 100% effective. So just take another half an hour sleep. And then the intelligence comes like that. You understand? So the mind and the intelligence are having a dialogue like that all the time. So that's the difference between the mind and the intelligence. Later on, Vishnu will explain that when one's mind comes under control, then the mind almost simultaneously goes in sync with the intelligence and the soul. But until the mind is controlled, and while it remains uncontrolled, there's always a battle going on. Yeah? It's like, it's kind of like in those cartoons, you see, like there's someone in the middle, and there's like an angel on one side and the devil on the other side, and he's like in between, like confused. That's basically, you can say that's like mind intelligence. Like that. Yeah. Oh, sorry, yes.
Is the ego in this picture? Is there an example of the ego in this picture?
Right, very good question. There's not an example of the ego in this picture. The ego literally means identity. So we have to live in this world with some kind of identity or ego. Now, there can be real ego or there can be false ego. Real ego is to understand I'm a spiritual being. I have a connection with the Supreme Spirit. And if I live in accordance with that, I'll find happiness. That's real ego. False ego means to think I'm this body. I'm English, I'm Indian, I'm man, I'm woman, I'm in this position, I have this title, I'm the best at this. All these temporary designations that we carry. In Sanskrit, we call this upadhis, or simply temporary designations. So in this picture, there's nothing in a sense which refers to the ego, but ego basically means a sense of identity and who you are. Ego comes from the Sanskrit word aham, which literally means I. Yeah. So that's where the word ego comes from. Yeah. Any other questions on this? Mind, intelligence, ego, body, pretty clear? Yeah. So the mind is very, very powerful. How many of you have been to... How many... Actually, put your hands up if you've seen a lion before. Okay, keep your hands up. Now, if you... Keep your hands up if you've seen a lion. Now, if you saw a lion in the zoo while it was in a cage, then put your hand down. And if you saw a lion while you were in a safari park in a car, then put your hand down. So Jagannath, you saw a lion, and it wasn't in a safari park, and it wasn't in a zoo, and it's actually on your Skype ID, isn't it? I remember that picture, actually. So that was a tamed lion.
No, it's a wild lion.
It's a wild lion that's being tamed somewhat.
Somewhat there because they've bought them from young, but they're in the wild.
Yes.
But yeah, if he stayed, if I was there 6 months later...
Yeah, you would have been pretty finito.
Yeah. By that age, it's okay.
Generally, whenever you come across a lion, either the lion has to be enclosed, or you have to be enclosed. Because if you ever come in contact with a lion, a wild lion that hasn't been tamed, and you're not enclosed and the lion is enclosed, it's not going to be good for your health. That's basically what the mind is. The mind is like a lion. And overexposure to the mind without regulation actually causes you to go in the wrong direction in your life. And therefore, what Krishna is explaining is that so much of our life is meant to help us to learn how to control the mind. Yeah. And if you don't control the mind, it's going to be a big, big problem. Just like some of you have cracked screens on your phone. Yeah? But you still use the phone, right? Yeah, Chris, you still use the phone, right? Some of you, your battery is basically worn out on the phone, so you got to charge it like 3 times a day. But you still use it, right? Some of you have a broken cover on the phone, but you still use it. The externals can be broken, but you can still use it. But the moment the software on your phone goes, then it's completely useless. So similarly, we may have some bodily problems with our gross body, but the moment we have a problem in the mind, then it basically becomes unbearable. And therefore, Krishna is talking again and again in the Gita about why we should control the mind. Yeah? Have you all heard of this saying? It's all in the mind. Put your hands up if you believe this is true, to some extent. What does it mean to you? It's all in the mind. What does that mean? Can anyone say?
Good and bad. How we react to different events, all that. Or our phobias, or complexes. All this based on our mind. Like, if we think that way, it will be. Or we can change our perspective by changing our the way we see, look at it.
Yes. Yes. So there's so many things happening to us in life, and according to our mental state, we'll ascribe whether it's like this or like that, whether it's good or bad, whether it's positive or negative. Two people could experience the very same things and react to it in very different ways according to their mental state. Very good. What else does it mean to you that it's all in the mind?
So having certain habits which have been going on for a long time, and you kind of react the same way, do certain things the same way. So it all comes from past experience.
So your mind helps you to creates habits or ways of thinking. Is that what you're saying?
It's based at your decision is based on sometimes your habits from the past as well.
Okay. Good.
Even like fear and overthinking.
Fear and overthinking, that's all in the mind. Yeah. So fear is something that's learnt. Did you know that? Fear is completely learnt. Put your hands up if you have a fear now that you didn't have 20 years ago. Put your hands up if you had a fear 20 years ago that you don't have now. Put your hands up if you have a fear that the person next to you probably doesn't have. That all means that fear is learned. It's all artificial. It's all simply temporary. It's all simply in the mind. So that's what, so Krishna is saying, that's also what it means when we say it's all in the mind. Anything else?
Like sense of time, like based on our mind, how our mind is engaged, we may get bored or we feel like time is just passing, flying. That even though that time is, there is not, it's all relative.
Yeah.
Based on our mind.
All the perception is coming from the mind. Yeah. Is that?
There's even studies that show that a lot of diseases actually caused by the mind. And if you cure, if you like, the mental problem, the actual physical disease also disappears.
Yes, yes. So if you, a lot of physical problems that people have are simply because of stress, anxiety, and basically an unbalanced mental state. It creates a physical knock-on effect. Yeah. So basically this is the point, that the mind, it's all in the mind because the mind creates reality and the mind also translates reality. How does the mind create reality? Because everything begins in the mind. A thought leads to an action. Repeated actions form your habits. Your habits form your character, and your character forms your destiny. But it all begins in the mind. I can even look at my life now and the way I'm living now, and I can even go back in time and actually pinpoint the times in my life when I had certain thoughts, ideas, desires, and I can see that where I am now is because of those thoughts, desires, and ideas within my mind. So whatever you're thinking, whatever your mental state is, that is the reality that you will create. And not only that, once you've created the reality, then the mind is also the one that translates it. So the amazing thing is, sometimes by your mind you can create the reality that you want, that you wanted. But because your mental state then changes, that reality that you once wanted, you translate in a way that this is not what I want. And that's why your mind is constantly playing tricks on you, because it's uncontrolled. So therefore, the mind is very, 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 very powerful. So Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Bandhuratmatmanastasya yenatmaivamanajita anatmanastasatrutve vatitatmaivasatruvat. This is a very famous verse. Krishna says, for one who has conquered the mind is the best of friends. But for one who has failed to do so, his mind will remain the greatest enemy. So the greatest conspirer, the greatest enemy, the greatest adversary that we have to face in our life is the one within. That's the greatest conspiracy going on. So we have to be able to know how to deal with that. And broadly speaking, this is what happens in the mind. Broadly speaking, the mind has four types of thoughts. Positive thoughts, negative thoughts, functional thoughts, and waste thoughts. The more uncontrolled your mind is, the more you will generate negative and waste thoughts. Have you ever had that experience? Sometimes you just sit down and you think about something and you can just think about it for even an hour. And then after an hour you realize, I absolutely got nowhere with that. Waste thoughts means worrying about things you can't do anything about, lamenting about the past, daydreaming about the future, which is completely unrealistic. Thinking about things which are beyond your influence. These are all waste thoughts. So how much of our mental space is hijacked by these waste thoughts? Negative thoughts means thinking bad of other people, thinking worse things will happen, always being pessimistic. And then you can obviously see what the opposite to that is. So when we have an uncontrolled mind, then all negative qualities will manifest in us. Lust, anger, greed, envy, pride, arrogance, all these things, harshness. And when we have a controlled mind, then all the positive elements will come up. Any questions on this so far? I'm going to come up with a solution in a minute, hopefully, based on what Krishna says. But so far, any questions on the mind, how the mind functions, these thoughts that we have, or any reflections you have on any of these points that we've mentioned so far? Yeah.
Yes? Well, on the cyclical person, if you looked at those four quadrants, what percentages would they be in terms of how much positive, how much negative, waste and functional?
In a typical person?
That's
a very good question. It will definitely be stacked in the negative and waste, because ultimately we have uncontrolled minds. And of course, there are positive people out there. There are people, and even we see in our circle of friends, sometimes you meet people who are positive, people who are quite optimistic, people who are quite upbeat and jolly. So there are people like that out there. But ultimately, it will be very difficult to maintain positivity unless one is having a spiritual discipline. In other words, to keep controlling the mind. And that's what Krishna is going to explain soon. So basically, for the average person, even though they may manifest very good qualities, unless it's, or a good mental state, unless it's founded upon deep spirituality, it will be very difficult to sustain it. And therefore, you see, even sometimes we think like, we have split personalities. Have you noticed? Like you're driving down and you could stop the car, and you know, because there's an old lady on the side and you want to let her pass, walk on the road, so you stop the car. And then she walks and you think, oh, I'm such a nice person. Like, I should give myself a medal. Like, I'm such a good person. And then you can just drive along and then get onto the motorway and then someone just cuts into your lane and you're beeping and you're warning and you're shouting and you have a totally different personality all of a sudden. Because our mental state is so unsteady because it's not founded upon something deeper. So, what percentage? Probably more negative and waste, and even when there is positivity and functionality, generally it's not sustainable for most people. Yes.
Why is it highly impossible to keep our mind without any thoughts?
Sorry, can you repeat that?
Why is it that very difficult to keep our mind without any thoughts, like empty? When we are awake, always something or other will be going on in our mind.
Yes. So how is it, why is it difficult to keep the mind
without any thoughts?
Without any thoughts. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna gives a beautiful analogy. He says, Apuryamanam majala pratistam samudramapa pravishanti advad. He compares the mind to an ocean. He says, the mind is like an ocean which is ever being filled with rivers. But in the mind of a self-realized person, the ocean never overflows. But he says, the rivers will keep coming. But one who's deep in consciousness, the ocean will never overflow. So why is it difficult to keep the mind free of thoughts? Because that's the nature of the mind. The mind is active. The purpose of the mind is to basically come up with options, is to facilitate activity. Because the soul by nature is active. So the mind is facilitating the active nature. So therefore the soul is active, the mind is active, the intelligence is active. Factually, we're always active. We're not never still. We're never doing nothing. Because even when we sit down and we sit still, the mind is going, the intelligence is going. Because that's the nature. So what Krishna explains is just like, for example, a child. If a child is acting in a very naughty way, then you don't tell the child, just go and sit in the corner and do nothing. Because it's not a good solution. Rather, what you do is you tell the child, okay, you're active, go around the room and pick up all the litter, or clear up all the chairs, or do something. Engage that energy positively. And that's basically what needs to be done. So you can't steal the mind. You can't blank the mind. But what we do is redirect the mind in a positive way, in check, in that way. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So the mind can never be blank. The mind can never be blank. There must be something going on in the mind. Because its very nature is to facilitate the active soul.
Sometimes I get this funny doubt. Like, why do we sleep at all? Like when we have this soul and body, subtle elements and physical element. And why do we... Definitely everyone needs to sleep, even animals. And where it started, like from the creation it's there, or... Why should we sleep at all? Like some doubt I get.
Why should we sleep?
Yeah.
Why do we need to rest?
And what is the origin like? Is it there from beginning of the creation or somewhere in between, in middle, we got transformed into this sleeping mode? So definitely every day we need to sleep.
Yeah. We need to sleep because we need to rest. Rest the body and the mind and the intelligence.
Why is it needed? Why can't? Because soul is so active all the time. But still, why is it soul is looking for that rest or body only?
Okay. So the idea is that this also gives us a hint that the material body and the material mind are not our natural state. Just like the body becomes old, the body becomes diseased, but the soul never wants that. The soul wants to be ever youthful. Similarly, the soul wants to be ever active, but the body, the mind, doesn't allow you to be ever active because it also needs a rest. So it's nature's arrangement for the body and the mind to need a rest. It's nature's arrangement for the body and the mind to deteriorate, for it to become fatigued, to help us understand that this body and mind is not part of our natural state. If we actually want to be free, if we actually want to fully express ourselves free of any limitation, then we have to go beyond the body and the mind. And actually what happens is, you see, when someone becomes more and more spiritually realized, they become less and less controlled by bodily limitations. See, very spiritually realized people, actually they don't need to sleep that much. They can go on very little sleep. Very spiritually realized people, even though the body gives pain, they don't feel suffering. Because to some extent they've transcended that bodily limitation. But because the material body and mind are material, by constitution, they need rest.
So if we can reach spiritual world, there won't be no need for sleep.
There's no need for sleep because you need it in the sense of because the body is tired. There might be sleep because it facilitates some kind of pastime or enjoyment or some kind of activity there. But you don't need it by force of necessity.
As in material world.
Yeah, in the material world, exactly.
Thank you.
Was there another question here? Oh, yeah.
I just wanted to check on, why is it that we have so much negative and wasteful thoughts?
Why is it that
why, why is mind naturally that way, rather than positive and functional?
Okay, so why is it that we go towards negative and waste thoughts? Negative and waste thoughts come because we're identifying with the material. When we identify with the material and try to control the material, try to enjoy the material, try to exploit the material, then inevitably we start creating negative and wasteful thoughts. But immediately when you transfer your ego, or you change your ego, understand your spiritual being, and retransfer your desires towards the spiritual, then your goals change, your desires change, your outlook changes, and therefore your thought pattern also changes to positive and functional. But when you're focused on the material, you will have waste thoughts, worrying about the past, you know, all that stuff, procrastinating, all of that, because your basic identity and goal and vision is misdirected. So somehow we have to reconfigure our mind. Our mind is like a browser, yeah, like Mozilla Firefox. So right now we have a mind, and it's like www.a. And in the browser of your mind, all the websites are going to come up according to what you've been doing in the last week, month, year. All those thoughts and desires will come up. The browser of your mind has a history. So all the places and all the desires and all the things that you've cultivated is right there in the history of your mind. So that's what's going to keep coming up. The browser of your mind has a home page. So by default, you always keep going back to that thing. So what you do by spiritual practice is you begin reconfiguring the browser of the mind from being negative and waste to being positive and functional. So the websites change, the history changes, the home page changes, everything changes. And the browser of your mind helps you to navigate to where you actually want to go and not be diverted into another thing. Yeah. But no matter how much you reconfigure the browser of your mind, pop-ups could come at any time. So even a spiritually realized soul, a self-realized, a very advanced spiritualist, sometimes even then a random desire may come. You think, whoa, where did that come from? Like sometimes you just get these thoughts and you think, oh my God, like once I was on the London Underground and I was, you know, like for those of you who have been, there's these like long escalators going down. So it was rush hour and I was at the top of one of these escalators. I'd just come back from Soho Temple, nice kirtan, nice class, and I was on the top of one of these escalators, it was packed. And this thought just came in my mind, I wonder what would happen if I pushed the person in front of me. And I was like, wow, I'm supposed to be spiritual. Where did that come from? But that's the nature of the mind. Anything could come up at any time. But basically, we've got to reconfigure the browser of our mind. That's what Krishna is basically saying in the Gita. So basically, we've got to go into the mind gym. We've got to start doing an internal workout. In other words, Krishna says, after Krishna tells Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita that he has to control the mind, then Arjuna says, Vayur Iva Sudushkaram. Krishna, I think to control the mind is even more difficult than controlling the wind. So, Krishna then says to Arjuna, Ashamshayam Mahabaho Manodo Nigraham Chalam Abhyasena Tukonteya Vairagyena Chagriyate. Krishna says, Ashamshayam, without any doubt, you must learn to control your mind. Otherwise, you're going to have a miserable life. And Krishna says, it's possible. How? Abhyasena Tukonteya Vairagyena Chagriyate. Two things. Vairagya. Learn to neglect the mind. Learn to ignore the mind. Learn to switch off from all the things that go through your mind and not take them that seriously every time they come up. First thing. Second thing is abhyas, which means daily spiritual practice. So if you want to control your mind, these are the two things you have to do. Number one, learn to neglect and ignore your mind. And the second thing is take up a daily spiritual practice, which helps you to make the mind your best friend. So we can go more into detail about what this is and what happens when you do this meditation, this chanting. Krishna explains that in this day and age that we're living in this Kali Yuga, that the only practical type of meditation that will help us to overcome the crazy mind is the chanting of mantras or the names of Krishna or the names of God. And these mantras, mana itself means mantra, mana strayate, that sound vibration which will help you to free the mind, to declutter the mind, to basically vacate the mind of all its negativity. And therefore, chanting on a daily basis is absolutely vital. Like, somehow or other, we have to have the self-discipline to do that. If we engage in day-solved, because the problems begin with an uncontrolled mind. We think the problems are outside of us, but actually the problems are with our own mind. It all begins with our own mental state. So therefore, when we chant, when we engage in this type of mantra meditation, then we become peaceful. Because meditation, mantra meditation specifically, what it helps you to do is broaden your perspective, see the bigger picture, deepen your consciousness. You see, like if I put a handful of salt in this and I drank it, what would it taste like? Salty, right? Now, if we filled this whole room with water and I put a handful of salt, and then we took some water from somewhere, would you taste the salt? No. Because your consciousness, because the volume has grown. So when we meditate, what it helps us to do is broaden our understanding of reality. broaden our understanding of what life is, broaden our perspective of the events that are happening to us and the things surrounding it. And when we have a very broad perspective because of meditation, then the things that previously would cause us so much anxiety, problems, suffering, pain, anxiety, you almost become immune to them. That's why Krishna says, one who self-realized, they can be in the most difficult of situations, or they can experience the most fortunate of situations, but they remain steady because they have a bigger consciousness and a bigger perspective. So the first thing is, when you meditate, you become peaceful. When you meditate, you become powerful. Sometimes people say, I don't have time to meditate, I've got a busy life, I've got so many things to do. The irony is that if you take time to meditate, you'll actually be able to go back into the world and do everything that you're doing, but do it with 5-10 times more power, efficiency, quality, because you'll have more determination, you'll have more focus, you'll have more clarity. It's like if I want to shoot an arrow, then the first thing I have to do is pull the arrow back. And you think like, no, but the arrow is supposed to go to its target. Why in the world are you pulling it back? Is you're doing anti. You're doing something contrary to your purpose. But an intelligent person will understand, the more I pull it back, when I release it, it's going to go with double speed. So who is that person in the world who's pulling back from the world? Who's saying, I'm not going to just run around in this rat race, but I'm going to take 1 hour every morning to pull back from this world, to disconnect from this world, and to basically come to terms with my inner world. That person is the person who's going to go back into the world and do amazing things. So I was telling this to some of the devotees the other day, that once I went to India, and there was one yogi, and I asked him, can you give me some tips to be more spiritual? And he looked at me and he said, every year, disconnect for 1 month. Every week, disconnect for 1 day. And every day, disconnect for 1 hour. And then he looked at me and he said, disconnect to connect. So I looked at him and I said, you should be on TEDx. That was good. So disconnect to connect. We must take some time to disconnect, and then we can connect back to the world, connect back to our jobs, connect back to our relationships, and ultimately connect back to Krishna in a much more powerful way. So if you meditate, don't see it as an antithesis to action or an antithesis to doing things in the world. Meditation actually helps you to be better, active in a better way, and to actually achieve more things in the world. And meditation ultimately helps you to become beautiful. It may not clear up the wrinkles on your face, or it may not change your appearance, but what it does do is help the best qualities come out of you. And you know what? Someone can have so much physical beauty, but if their character is defective, people will be turned away. But a person who has content of character, who has tolerance, humility, kindness, patience, all these beautiful qualities, and the whole world is attracted. So ultimately, in this way, we can understand Krishna is saying that the real conspiracy is the conspiracy within our own consciousness, which is being created by the mind. And therefore, be very aware of how this mind is acting on you, and do what you can within your scope and time and effort to try and control the mind by, one, neglecting it, and number two, retraining it, redefining it by doing daily spiritual practice, daily meditation like that. Hare Krishna. So I could go on and speak more, but I won't do that. I guess we have a few minutes if there's any questions or final comments or any reflections or anything you would like to clarify? Yes?
So, will chanting help you find the deepest place?
Will chanting help you to find your deepest purpose? Yes. Chanting is very, very powerful. Sometimes we can't understand how a sound vibration can be so powerful. But it's kind of like this. Imagine I would play one of your favorite songs from 10 years ago or whatever it may be. As soon as you would hear that song, then what would happen is so many memories would come back. So many emotions would come back. So many... the people that you are surrounded by, the places you are at, all of that comes with the sound vibration. So it's almost as though the sound vibration is intimately connected to your consciousness. So when you do the chanting, when you recite mantras, it's explained in one verse, Golokera Prema Dhan Hari Nam Sankirtan, that this vibration is coming from Goloka, which means the spiritual realm. So when you hear a spiritual sound vibration which is descending from another platform, then what it helps you to do is reawaken your memories of your spiritual identity, your spiritual purpose, your spiritual essence. And that's why when you actually chant, everything comes from that chanting. You get full realization, full revelation of what you should be doing in life, and everything actually becomes really clear. But that chanting is a discipline. And sometimes what we do is we have a very romantic idea of meditation or chanting. We think like, I'll chant, and then I'll just float, and then I'll be with Krishna, and I'll be like amazing, and everything will be... And then you get your hand into the bead bag and you start chanting or in the kirtan, and your mind's going wild. And you're thinking, this isn't doing anything for me. But the point is, it's a discipline. Therefore, one of the teachers in our tradition, he says, I don't judge a person by what they can do in one day, but I judge a person by what they do every day. Anyone can come and chant the mantra for a whole day, but what do they do every day? How much are they chanting every day? How much are they meditating every day? How much are they applying themselves every day? Is that discipline which will actually help you to reawaken your purpose and your understanding and your spiritual identity? So we don't like the word discipline. Discipline is like not a nice word, isn't it? One spiritual teacher said to me, the pain of discipline is uncomfortable, but the pain of regret is depressing. And he says, if you don't discipline yourself, then the subsequent regret that you will feel because you know I didn't achieve what I could have achieved, that subsequent regret will make you feel even worse. So even though we don't like discipline, if we can somehow incorporate that discipline and do something, to apply ourselves every day, we'll get great benefits. The US President Truman, he once said, I studied the lives of great people. And in the lives of great people, I saw that the first battle they won in their life was the battle over their own mind. Once you win the battle over your own mind, every other battle in life becomes easy. But you only win the battle of your own mind through discipline. So yes, in short, the chanting does bring all realization of your purpose in life. But it requires a sustained practice in order for it to be fully effective. Any other last questions or comments? Yeah.
How do you discipline yourself to wake up early every morning? I'm sure you have that conversation.
How do you discipline? You know, like I live in a monastery and it's like I live in a room sometimes with another 10 people. And it's amazing because the person who puts the alarm on the earliest is also the deepest sleeper. So sometimes their alarm is going off at 2:30 in the morning and they're fast asleep and everyone else wakes up. And then every half an hour another alarm is going off. So just come and join us in the monastery. No, so on a serious note, how do you... Yeah, because getting up early is the key. Actually, if we were to say one key to transform your life into a spiritual life is get up early every day, and before you do anything else, you chant, meditate. So how do you get up early? So we could say many things, and probably the most basic and simple thing is make sure you go to sleep on time. Don't hang out at the Bhakti Yoga Center. It's okay, today is an exception. But yeah, try to get to bed on time. Another important thing is regulation. You see, if you live a life of regulation, and what I mean by that is going to sleep at the same time and waking up at the same time, if you lead a life of regulation, then it leaves less room for your mind to play tricks on you. Because it's like, no, that every day I go sleep and I wake up at this time. So there's no excuse not to get up at this time. But the day you start leading an unregulated life, then the mind says, oh no, you went sleep 1 hour later, that means you need 3 hours more sleep. I mean, logically, it plays games on you like that. So get to bed early, live a regulated life. Of course, habits like try not to eat late at night and things like that. It's not Prashadam today, right?
Yes.
Oh, it is. We're breaking all the rules. Set an alarm and put it on the other side of your room. So you have to get up and turn it off, whatever it may be, get someone to call you. There's even people now that do like Skype chanting together. Right? So to motivate each other to chant in the morning, they at 4 o'clock in the morning they log onto Skype and check on each other, and they sit in front of the computer and meditate together, which is quite nice. You know, it helps. We have strength in numbers. So anyway, these are many, many different things you can do, but ultimately, we have to be convinced. We have to be convinced that this is of utmost priority. I can do everything in life, but if I don't get my spirituality right, if I don't get my mind right, then everything else will be a failure. So where is it on our priority list? How high is it in our level of urgency? To that level we'll have determination. So we have to also be around people who have such determination, who have such conviction. And when you're around such people, it rubs off on you. So yeah, it really is something which is essential to every day try and chant and live that. When I joined the monastery, I asked one monk for some advice. So I said, can you give me some advice? And he looked at me and he said, when the alarm goes off, get up, dress up, and show up. I was like, I'm not doing a monastery, this sounds like a military camp, you know? And then I realized that level of discipline is required if you really want to go somewhere in your spirituality. It's not enough to just sit in a, you know, sit around and say, I want to be spiritual, I do this. What are we doing on a day-to-day basis in terms of effort to really inculcate that spirituality? That's going to determine the level of our depth. So we can fool so many people around us about how spiritual we are. We can say the words, dress the part, whatever it may be. But ultimately, we know where we're at spiritually according to how much investment we're putting in the development of our spirituality in the discipline. So. Yes.
So sometimes you know what to do,
But your mind is like everywhere. You get angry, you get pissed, and you see that I can't control it anymore. So, in that situation, what is the best way? Then you like, you know what's right, but you, like at that present moment, you can't do anything. It's just sometimes situations, you're under pressure too much. And
so what do we do in that moment where we're in a pressure situation and we know we're going to do the wrong thing? How do we... Well, the first thing is we have to avoid even getting to that point. You see, like... how can I explain this? We have to create a safe situation in our life. We have to create safety in our life. Yeah. Like when one is a recovering alcoholic, then they make sure they don't subject themselves to people, to environments, to influences where those things will again become... will again incite them desires. They're very careful. That's the first thing they'll tell you at Alcoholics Anonymous. Right? Don't subject yourself to environments, people, or influences which will again incite those desires within you. So similarly in our lives, we have to somehow build a safety whereby we don't subject or expose ourselves to things which will again cause us to do things we know are wrong. So safety is a very, very big thing that we have to be intelligent about what we're exposing ourselves to. And Srila Prabhupada once he said that this is one of the complaints of my students, that they're too lackadaisical in what they subject themselves to and therefore they're very easily influenced. Yeah. So we should definitely think on a daily basis, what am I exposing myself to? Because that's what will be incited within yourself. Because basically what happens is once you get to the point like that, where you're in the heat of the moment, you probably are going to make the wrong decision. So you need to somehow avoid getting to that point. Does that make sense? I know it's difficult because... to some extent, it's easier for me because I live in a monastery. So, okay, I live a little bit away from the world. Whereas, okay, you live in the world, you function in the world, you're constantly surrounded by these environments. But within these environments, you have to find your own sacred space and protect yourself. So that's something you can think about. But yeah, otherwise we'd be tempted away. There was once, maybe I'll end on this. There was once these pranksters, and what they did is they went into the New York Stock Exchange. So you know, like the Stock Exchange, people are like, yeah, buy, 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 and you know, they're doing all these big deals, and they're shouting, and it's like super passionate. So these pranksters, you know what they did? They went into the New York Stock Exchange and it was the midday, the height of the trading. Yeah, so everyone's like shouting and buying and selling stock shares. You know, billions of pounds, dollars are being lost and won at every moment. So they're cutting all these deals. So what these pranksters did is they went into the New York Stock Exchange and they climbed up to the top of the trading floor. And then they had these bucketfuls of fake $1 bills. And right in the middle of the trading, they threw these $1 fake bills onto the trading floor. And guess what everyone did? They stopped all their trading, they stopped everything, and they started running for these fake $1 bills. So they all mad, scramble, rush for these fake $1 bills. And then after some time, they look at it and they realize, oh my God, these are just fake $1 bills. There's no substance here. But in the meantime, they go back to doing their trading and they realize they lost millions of dollars. So the immediate sight of something with that immediate, in that moment, heat of the moment, you get so diverted that you then leave behind so much spiritual wealth that you are building up, you lose it because of an impulsive decision or impulsive act. That's basically our life again and again and again. So you have to make sure you create safety in your life, and the ultimate safety comes from doing the meditation and the chanting in the morning, because that will create a sacred space within which you live for the rest of the day. Thank you very much for your time and attention. I hope some of that was useful, and I'll hand over to Pandita Pandukani as well. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.